Those who have ever talked to me about preparing my messages on Sunday, I prepare two very different messages each Sunday. And typically what I do is I'll start with the 11 o'clock because there's always these prescribed verses that they suggest that you use. And I will begin writing a message from that. And then I'll think about that theme and I'll pull part of that theme over and begin writing the 9 o'clock message. Days like this day are hard for me because I don't start with Scripture, which is how I've always written messages. So as I was digging around trying to figure out what particular theme I wanted to have today, I realized that today at churches around the world, they will be practicing and recognizing Christ the King Sunday. Now, the problem with Christ the King Sunday for me is that it can quickly turn into our religion is superior to your religion. I mean, Christ the King. So, I decided I wanted to talk a little bit about the dangers of exclusive religion. Charles Kimball, a renowned professor of comparative religion at Wake Forest University, opens his book, When Religions Go Bad, saying, "Religion is arguably the most powerful and pervasive force on earth. Throughout history, religious ideas and commitments have inspired individuals and communities of faith to transcend narrow self-interest in pursuit of higher values and higher truths. The record of history shows," he says, "that noble acts of love, self-sacrifice, and service to others are frequently rooted in deeply held religious world reviews." But then he goes on to say, at the same time, history clearly shows that religion has been linked directly to some of the worst examples of human behavior. Questions about why people do bad things, sometimes unspeakably bad things, he says, in the name of religions are not new, of course. Theologians and philosophers have long wrestled with questions about the sources and manifestations of individual and corporate evil. Well, given that it is certainly true that theologians and philosophers have long wrestled with questions about what causes good religions to go bad, it should be of no surprise that there are a multitude of conclusions about why exactly it is and what exactly it is that causes negative and hurtful practices in different faiths. Many, if not most, of those conclusions are true or are at least grounded in truth. However, it seems to me that there is one conclusion that just doesn't get enough focus, enough attention. Possibly, not surprisingly, I'd like for us to think about that a little bit today. It may be that part of why there is so little talk addressing the issue that I would like to talk about today is because the three biggest religions in the world tend to practice some form of it. The it that I'm talking about is exclusive religion. Now, having just celebrated Thanksgiving, perhaps it would be appropriate to share a story of early English settlement in North America to gain a bit of understanding about exclusive religion. So, in the early 1600s, the settlers of Jamestown very quickly ran into more problems than they expected. They found themselves on the edge of starvation. And as winter rolled in, They were so hungry that they actually started digging up graves as a source of food. Put simply, things were as horrible as they could imagine, and yet they were getting worse. Now, a local tribe of Native Americans saw the suffering of the English in Jamestown. So They took pity on them, and they brought them food and taught them how to even successfully grow their own food sources. Ultimately, the crisis was averted. Now, as you might imagine, the English were thrilled. They must have been very grateful. I mean, you think so, right? But sadly, not exactly. Let me read you an excerpt from a diary of one of the Jamestown folks. It says, "If it had not pleased God to put terror into the savage's heart, we would have all perished by those wild and cruel pagans being in the weak state we were." Really? The folks who just showed you compassion are savages? The folks who helped you in the need to practice cannibalism are wild and cruel? They are wild and cruel? Well, the absurdity of it all is practically palpable. Logic had been unceremoniously tossed out the window in favor of religious fervor. It's all right there in that diary entry. The English call the ones who helped them pagans, polytheists. And none of the natives' gods were what the English considered to be the one true God. Their exclusive way of understanding theology and religion told them that no matter what kind or of caring someone had given to them, if they didn't have right belief, they must be evil. So, good deeds, empirical evidence, logic be damned. The only way to explain their actions without bringing into question that someone can actually be good without your specific understanding of God is to dismiss facts, dismiss experience, and then to simply chalk the savage's behavior up to the actions that your God did. Do you need any evidence that that's actually what occurred? Well, no. But you don't need it because you simply believe in your God. We actually see it in modern politics in the U.S., sometimes more subtly than others, but frequently it's up front and center. The bastardization of Christianity and how it is now manipulated to serve as a tool to support things that are not biblical is nothing short of sickening. It's the one of the key dangers of non-inclusive religion. We see it time and time again. After all, it is of no surprise that a falsely evangelical administration might keep trying to keep people who practice Islam out of the country. After all, they're savages, right? They don't believe in the same exclusive God. They must be wild and cruel. A belief in a God of an exclusive religion, a sort of you're either with us or against us kind of spirituality, is an absolutely, absolutely perfect tool for politicians who might have nefarious plans. See, as I suggested earlier, the practice of exclusive religion almost always ultimately leads to logic being unceremoniously tossed out the window in favor of religious fervor. If you are a politician, and you know that you want to get people to vote for and support laws that will work against them, you really need them to lose interest in logic when it comes to those specific things. Now, what do we know of that has a proven track record for causing people to throw logic out the window? Well, hopefully, clearly at this point, the answer is exclusively practiced religion. It really should be of no surprise that the more powerful a politician becomes, the more likely they are to publicly practice the kind of religion that encourages their constituents to pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. Frighteningly, many have developed it as a manipulative tool so well, they've actually managed to get folks not to question them when they're actually doing things that are not very much biblical or simply not very much, very moral for that matter. In his book, Create Your Own Religion, Daniele my French isn't very good. Daniele Bolele says, this dogmatic certainty of being the only ones to have access to the truth makes the adherence of exclusive approach intolerant at heart. Whereas individuals who follow multiple paths have no problem with those who wish to follow only one, the courtesy is not usually returned, since the believers in a single path typically want everyone else to abandon their ideas and embrace their own. He goes on to point out, the inclusive and the exclusive approach are not simply different. Equally legitimate points. This is not, he says, a matter of personal taste. In one case, we're faced with a rigid choice precluding all others. In the other, we are allowed full freedom of choice, as long as we don't infringe on the freedom of others. Now, for me, that points to not only the dangers of exclusive religion, but also to the advantages of inclusive religion. At the core of inclusive religious outlooks is the understanding that no one can ever fully understand the entire truth. In fact, the more we learn about the truth, the more we begin to realize its complexity and vastness and how unlikely it is that anyone will ever fully understand it. Now, for that reason, many spiritual practices, from Taoists to Christian scholars to Native Americans, speak of life and divine power as the great mystery. It's a recognition that while things of the divine might sometimes be detected, they really never can be fully understood. Those who practice this kind of spirituality are much more likely to see it as a lifelong pursuit, that it will always be. And ultimately, they see it as a work in progress. And those practicing an exclusive religion, on the other hand, tend to believe that they can, and frequently already have, arrived at a full understanding of the truth. Fourth century pagan apologists Samachus put it this way. What does it matter by which wisdom each of us arrives at the truth? It is not possible that only one road leads to such a sublime mystery. I also like Thomas Paine's perspective on this. He says, the key to heaven is not in any keeping of any particular sect, nor ought the road to it be obstructed by any. The reality is that pluralism is quickly becoming the water in which we swim in this modern world. Not surprisingly, there are those people for whom that reality is really frightening. They leap to conclusions that pluralism will only lead to a loss of morality. And of course, more times than not, they're talking about a very specific set of morals as defined by their own exclusive dogma. If anything, the small amount of growth that the more exclusive Christian denominations experienced about a decade ago or so, as other denominations were actually in a slight decline, were probably just a momentary opposing response to the increased pluralism in the world. Now, ironically, as we see in things like the current senatorial race in Alabama, where conservative Christians are putting their full support behind a man who is a known sexual abuser of teenage girls, the rhetoric that comes out of exclusive religions very rarely ever produces positive results over time. The willingness of the typical exclusive believer to throw logic out the window, paired with the pursuit of power by those at the top of the pecking order, almost always ends in various forms of chaos. Removal of freedoms, hate groups, killings, wars, you name it. I'd like to conclude with these thoughts from Bolelli. Tolerating repressive efforts is not a sign of open-mindedness or enlightened multiculturalism. It's just stupid. Tolerating those who want to ban tolerance is plain suicidal. Freedom doesn't extend to those who wish for nothing better than to restrict freedoms of others. The challenge we face is to combine the ability to be open-minded with an iron will. Openness without strength is useless. Strength without openness is oppression. The love for freedom needs to go hand in hand with our strong values. The future of our world depends on developing religions able to bring these qualities together. My challenge to each of us and to this spiritual community is that we stay focused on openness and pluralism, that we do not do it halfway, but rather that we do it with energy, intelligence, creativity, and an iron will, along with a bit of humility and compassion. If we do, I can promise you, we will have an amazing adventure together. To share your thoughts with the spiritual community that's gathered here about the topic at hand, or the talk you heard, or something that it brought to mind. I will remind you, we have a good group here. If you'll keep your comments focused and concise, it'll provide us opportunity to make sure anyone who wants to speak has a chance. Are there those who want to share?
Hello, I'm David, and I agree with your discussion, and I think it's actually an extension of your topic several weeks ago about tribalism.
In a lot of ways, it is.
We're just seeing tribalism. I mean, religion is just used as a tool of people whipping the gang up against somebody just to have
exclusive religious practices are definitely one of the key tools of unhealthy tribalism. Yeah, definitely. I completely agree.
Hi, I'm Shawan. Good morning. I'm always taking notes on my phone. I'm not texting, but I can keep them that way. Just some things that I got from Mark's message. Focus on sameness. We're more alike than we are different. No matter our theology, whether metaphysical or more traditional, it seems that all have something to offer. And the quote that it's not possible, or the thought that it's not possible that One Road offers understanding to all, really just kind of opened up everything for me. And I feel that respect and honor for all traditions, for the love of one another and the connection to the divine that they give, is an important part of what you were saying.
Absolutely.
And so thank you for that. I was in a yoga class not too long ago that had a quote from Thich Nhat Hanh, and it says, "Breathing in, I calm my body and mind. Breathing out, I smile. Dwelling in the present moment, I know this is the only moment." And it
love
all
that.
Goes so fast.
Thank you for sharing. That's great. Yeah, go right here. Right here. No, he's not. He got his hand up anymore.
Good morning. My name is Alvester Miller III. I'm a filmmaker and poet. The point that you put out was what stumbled me in terms of, I still ain't going to the idea that Jesus Christ was a perfect being. So in that aspect, maybe I'm holding something that blocks me, or holding something that's something. But maybe that was just what I interpreted your statement in terms of no one being able to have that full understanding. So I just have an idea that someone came and they had the full understanding, so I could at least seek to never attain it, but like seek it. Could you open that up for me a little bit?
I would challenge you to maybe think of it this way, that Christ for you is a representation of the perfect being, and that there might be others who have other paths to understanding who God is and how to be in relationship with God. But for you, that's the one that works best. But to provide an openness for what might be better for other people, does that help any at all? Rather than saying that Christ was the one perfect being, how about that Christ for you is you consider Christ the one perfect being, and that helps you in your journey towards an understanding of a relationship with God and how to relate with humanity. I mean, it's challenging, I get it, but just a thought, maybe a seed. Sure. Yeah. Yeah, and I think that language that you're using for me, I think that's very healthy, actually. And I think saying for me makes it very inclusive. Yeah, because you're making space for other people to have a varying a belief set. Not to scale it down way too much. I tend to oversimplify everything. What I taught my kids growing up was three things. I don't care what you believe, as long as you don't hurt other people, and I'll give you bonus points if you help other people. And that's what I hear you saying, is that I have this belief system that doesn't hurt other people and ultimately encourages you to help other people. For me, that's very inclusive and helpful. Yeah. Others.
Good morning. I'm Ralph. When I saw your topic this morning, I thought, my, that's timely. Because I've been very disturbed about the news from Egypt this week. And here a group who arrived in six SUVs and got out and shot up a mosque that was in prayer and killed half the people who were there. And it was almost like, as if the, if you put it in a Christian context in America, if the a group of Baptists attacked a group of Presbyterians. I mean, they're supposed to all be worshipers of Allah and followers of Muhammad. And so these people felt they were right. They felt that they were so right that the other people had no justification for living, that they were, it was just...
That's
the opposite of what you were talking about, and I thought this is such a timely message.
Yeah, that's your example is the perfect example of the dangers of religion. Perfect example.
Hi, I'm Ruth, and I've been recently reading a book called The Untethered Soul, and the last chapter really struck me, looking through the eyes of God, really expressing love is the universal unifier. And the more feeling of love, the more toward the divine that you are going.
Yeah.
And one of the examples, there was an analogy that I really enjoyed and I thought of during your sermon, your message, was if you walk into a botanical garden, you don't start judging because leaves are in different directions and there are all many different varieties of plants that they just don't match, and all the, you know, there's just endless variety and they're just not the same at all. And if all of us could look at humanity in the same way as you would look as you're entering a botanical garden, my, that would solve a lot of problems. And I just thought that was one of the most beautiful analogies I had read, and I enjoyed it. Wanted to share that with
That's
you.
Lovely. Thank you for sharing that. Are there any others who have? Chuck?
What Ralph said really resonated, that these people did what they did because they thought they were right. And for me, that's been one of the uses of religion, is to gain power over people. One of the things that I've liked about my 13 years here is that we have attempted it most of the time to draw from the wisdom of many teachings. I think for me personally, we had a brief period where we didn't do that, and it didn't work so well for me. I am very happy to hear a message like you gave this morning.
I appreciate that, Joe, pretty much. Mark in the back. We'll let this be the last one so that we can have a little more time for the music.
I thank you for not just the comments about religion, but about our what we've been taught about the myths that have been created. And so much of what we believe are things that have been created and put out as fact, and but upon closer examination, you know, things are not always. And I think about, you know, the theme that we have now, you know, let's make America great again, looking towards some mythical past that we need to get back to. And I can imagine what Ralph was talking about, where you have one group in a particular religious faith doing violence against another group. That I can imagine them saying, let's make Islam great again. And you've got one group that is convinced that they're going to bring us back, bring Islam or bring the Muslim faith back to some mythical, probably mythical point.
Yep.
So, you know, the idea that you know, we've got it figured out and we've got to, you know, bring all these other ignorant folks into the fold, you know. And I've seen some things here lately, Dr. Henry Louis Gates, some of the specials he's done about African history on PBS, how a lot of the empire building was done by folks who had decided that, you know, folks aren't practicing the religion correctly and that I need to correct that, and drawing people in to themselves, you know, and giving them the power to be able to exert their will on other nations and things. And I think that's the way the Europeans, you know, have done. And we've studied some of the things in the groups here, you know, about Constantine, that maybe a lot of the decisions he made weren't so much about his love of Christ as it was about seeing this religious Christian faith as an opportunity to exert power over a broad group of people. So
absolutely.
I appreciate all the things you had to say today.
Appreciate that. Thanks for the feedback. Elsie, turn it back over to you so that we can hear a little more music.